You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman. And Spike, I'm coming off a weekend that I watched more professional wrestling than football, so I'm getting ready to talk some Pro Bowl with you. How about you?
I didn't watch any professional wrestling. My God, I did take a couple concussions in the ring, so I won't be speaking particularly well today. No, look, I get the professional wrestling thing a little bit, but like I can't. I'm like too old, man. I'm too old to get into it now.
I used to watch a lot more of it like years ago, but like now it's like mainly the staple like pay-per-views, like the Royal Rumble or WrestleMania. That's usually what I'm tuning into with my brothers, who are much more avid fans of it than I am nowadays. But yeah, I saw Ronda Rousey join the WWE, so that was kind of interesting. Yeah, she's a two-sport athlete now. But just to open the show, you can find both of us on Twitter at Grant Goldberg, at Spike Friedman. You can find the show's Twitter at Lock Seahawks. And you can listen to us basically anywhere you find your podcast. We're on Spotify, like we mentioned last week. And yeah, it's exciting times. And I guess the Pro Bowl was a more interesting game down to the stretch. I watched a little bit of it, like I mentioned. The Seahawks, notable performances. Doug Baldwin, I guess, had the best game out of every Seahawk. Michael Bennett jumped off sides about 14 times. And Russell Wilson threw an interception on miscommunication with Michael Thomas. Earl Thomas, I didn't really see anything. I mean, the most notable thing Earl Thomas did was run up and down the sidelines on a big play to Doug Baldwin. But that was about it. But I guess we don't really have much to talk about with the Pro Bowl except like the performances. But even with the Seahawks, they didn't really have any standout performances. So we're not going to waste time talking about that. But something during Pro Bowl week that caught my eye, caught everybody's eye, was Earl Thomas talking about a potential holdout. Spike, fill us in on that.
Yeah, so Earl Thomas has 1 year left on his deal. There was obviously rumblings after the Cowboys game when he went to the Cowboys locker room and told them to come get him, that he might be trade bait, which is wild and crazy and not a great idea. Obviously, he has 1 year left on his deal. Historically, the Seahawks have renegotiated with their stars, usually in the season prior to there being 1 year left in their deal, or in this offseason that he's in. So as much as like he's threatening a holdout, he's basically asking to be treated the way other Seahawks stars have been treated in the past. And given his quality, his importance to the team, I mean, I can't think of anyone other than Russ and Bobby who were more important than Earl. It makes sense. They should give him a contract. Like,
yeah, he's
28 years old. And obviously he's had more injuries over the last 2 years than he had prior. But the leg break was a freak. He recovered from the hamstring pretty quickly and pretty effectively. So it isn't like he's got some sort of recurring thing or ligament. There isn't the sort of issue there is with Sherman, where he's coming back from a significant injury this offseason and you might hesitate. There's no reason to hesitate. Give him a top of the market deal. Match Eric Berry's deal. Give it to him today.
Yeah, it's not unreasonable at all for Earl to just wanted to be treated like these players that are getting extensions from the team, and him being, you know, among the best players on the team consistently throughout his tenure, you know, it's not unreasonable at all for him to want that, and he deserves it. He backs it up with his play on the field, and I see some talk about like this becoming a distraction potentially, but some players are worth the distraction, and Earl Thomas definitely falls into that category. And you want to give him the money that he deserves. And I think that, you know, as soon as you can do it, you do it for Earl Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. He's literally Earl Thomas.
That's really the only
thing he
needs to open negotiations with that.
He's like, I'm Earl Thomas.
Earl Thomas.
Give me like $100,000 more than the highest paid safety in the league. Let's go. Like, done. Like, that's right. Like, what are we doing? Like, done.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do for star players. You want to keep the star players on your team, and oftentimes you're gonna have to pay a lot of money for that. And so I think the Seahawks should do it.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna take a break, come back, talk about some of the other Seahawks Pro Bowl players, maybe start talking Super Bowl. This is Locked On Seahawks. Grant Kohlberg, Spike Friedman. Back after this.
We're back with more Locked On Seahawks. Grant Kohlberg, Spike Friedman, and we closed on Earl Thomas staying with the team long term, and you know how he deserves his new contract and more money. But a guy that's talked about as, you know, potentially leaving Seattle or the team should move on from him is Michael Bennett, and I think we're both in agreement that the Seahawks shouldn't move on from him, that he's still a great player, he's a great guy to have in the locker room, and yeah, they should do what they can to keep him on the team rather than get rid of him.
Yeah, with Bennett, there's been a lot of sort of assumption that he's going to be moving on this offseason. But if you look at his contract, the way it's structured, there's not a lot of salary cap relief no matter how the Seahawks move on from him. So the only way it makes any sense for them to move on to him, from him, is if they get a motherload offer in terms of draft compensation. And I'm talking about like 2 second round. I'm talking about like quarterback sort of compensation, because we'd be paying him, I believe, $8 million in dead money versus $10 million to have him play. So again, it's just not that much salary cap relief. And Bennett is still a very productive member of this D line and could be very good for this team for the next year. After next year, it makes sense for the team to move on from him. And yeah, and then you add on the fact that he was, you know, the Walter Payton nominee from the team this year. He's so smart, so connected to the community in Seattle.
Right.
You want him to stay. That I don't understand why the assumption has been that he's going to be gone, except that people who have insider access have said as much. And given his comments this week at the Pro Bowl, which were basically like, Seattle's great, we're the top dogs, you know, the Rams still ain't us.
Yeah.
It makes me think he's not gone.
Oh yeah, no, that kind of reaffirmed like my belief that he'd probably stay at least this year. Here's the full quote via SiriusXM NFL. He says, "We're still dominating that division. The Rams played a good season, but we're still the big brother in that league. Don't get it misconstrued. We're still the guys on the block. Next year we'll bounce back and be strong." And now that sounds like a guy that, you know, is hungry to come back and kind of prove something to me. Because, you know, they kind of got punched in the mouth by the Rams, and they want to come back and show, you know, they're still the big dog in the NFC West, and that's still their division. So it's good to hear that from Michael Bennett, like you were saying, because, you know, it gives me faith that he's going to come back and he's going to, you know, be, you know, as competitive as ever. You know, there's a bunch of competitive personalities on the defense, you know, on the field and in the locker room, and I think that it's good to have that, and it's good to, you know, have that hunger, have that fire to come back and compete, and especially in a year where you miss the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's also a question of new defensive line coaches coming in and whether there's value in continuity or there's value in sort of turning over the whole line. That said, you know, you worry about motivation issues from a guy like Sheldon Richardson if he's the highest paid and the only real vet on the line. I don't love that. I love it with him getting paid next to Michael Bennett. I'll just say that as another mark in Bennett's favor.
Yeah, you want your talent to be surrounded by even more talent, as crazy as that sounds. But yeah, Michael Bennett, I feel like he, as good as he is on the field, his mind is just on par with that. I think that it helps. It benefits everyone around him. You see him teaching Frank Clark mid-game about what to do, you know, when an offensive lineman, you know, counters his, you know, spin move or whatever it is. You know, he's kind of like a coach on the field. And I think, you know, we've been lucky to have him alongside Cliff Averill for all these years, you know, not only on the field, but in the communities and with all the work that they respectively do. And, you know, hopefully Cliff can come back healthy. And, you know, that's a whole nother conversation for another time. But yeah, I don't think that there's a better defensive end duo off the field than Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that covers it for the Michael Bennett talk, and we'll take another break and we'll come back to you with the rest of the show.
All right, we are back, Locked On Seahawks. Spike Friedman, Grant Goldberg, talking Seahawks. Or wait, no, we're not talking Seahawks right now. We're going to talk a little bit of the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl?
Super Bowl week has begun in Minnesota with two fairly villainous franchises in the Philadelphia Eagles and New England Patriots. The Eagles, it's tough to call them villains per se. I mean, they never won the Super Bowl. I think they are the most villainous non-Super Bowl winners.
Now,
I'll say that.
Like, can we think of a villain, like a famous villain that just never really did anything?
The Brain from Pinky and the Brain jumps out as as a potential avatar for the Philadelphia Eagles and their fan base, maybe.
Let's see. Like, this is gonna pander to the younger audience, maybe people with kids, but Dr. Doofenshmirtz from the show Phineas and Ferb,
I know,
always has an evil plan that's always thwarted. So yeah. maybe he fits the bill too. I think that, you know, it's when you
Mojo Jojo from the Powerpuff Girls for the mid tier of audience in our group.
Right. That's my age group. I think that when you come into a game and it's questionable if we're going to root for you against the Patriots, you know, that says all you need to say about your franchise and where you stand in fans' eyes. But honestly, I don't know how to feel about this game because, you know, the Eagles, they have a solid, you know, team offense and defense, but it all comes back to the quarterback and Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia get a full 2 weeks to scheme against Nick Foles. And it's kind of, you know, I don't know. I'm like in such a gray area about this game. I don't know what to think about it. Spike, do you have any better thoughts about this Super Bowl matchup?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it and the Eagles roster is really good. We know this. We played them. They can do a lot of things that can get to they can frazzle Tom Brady. And I'll say this, their cornerbacks who we've mocked at different times on this podcast through the year have gotten a lot better as the year's gone on. Ronald Darby's been pretty good for them. Blanking on the name of their slot corner, he had that big pick six against Minnesota. And he's been very good, which is crucial. You have to get great play out of your slot corners against New England.
Yeah.
We know that. We saw what happened when Jeremy Lane, who was at the time a much better slot corner, went down in the Super Bowl, and that really hurt our defense. I mean, you got to be able to get pressure and cover man-to-man. And so for me, I'm like, the Eagles' defense is set up pretty well to deal with Tom Brady. That said, their offense is very well structured, but Nick Foles is not. I mean, he's good. He looked good moving around in the pocket against Minnesota's pass rush, but he isn't the sort of guy to like break down a play and get to that second, third option the way Carson Wentz is.
Exactly. I think that, the especially the secondary of the Philadelphia Eagles, they're going to have a big game, especially, like you said, the slot corners, because we can't see another. I know Edelman's injured, but we can't see another, you know, Edelman on Thorold Simon kind of play. It's too big of a game to have that kind of mismatch, and I think that it's going to be a big game for Malcolm Jenkins because, you know, he's probably going to be tasked a little bit with Gronk, and, you know, he's good safety, but, you know, it's Rob Gronkowski, and, you know, no matter how you cut it, you know, that's going to be a tough matchup for anybody. So, you know, it's going to rely heavily on the secondary, and the pass rush is going to have to, you know, ramp it up and force Tom Brady to make these mistakes and force him to, you know, kind of just give these secondary opportunities to make plays. And that's what we saw in the Super Bowls against the Giants that the Patriots lost. Their defensive line was able to get lots of pressure on Tom Brady and you know, force mistakes. And so there's a recipe out there to beat Tom Brady, but if you let Tom Brady hang around long enough, as we saw in the last two Super Bowls that he's played in, you know, he's gonna take advantage of all the chances he's given, because you can't repeatedly give him the ball and expect him not to score no matter what defense he's up against and no matter how big your lead is. Because we saw it against the Seahawks defense, and we saw it against the Falcons, who were up by 25 points. So,
and against the Jaguars this last week, who were up 10 and had a better defense than probably either that iteration of the Seahawks or the Falcons.
Right. And so, you know, the saying goes, never count out touchdown Tom, but it's true. Yeah. I think, as much as it pains me to say, I've lived it. And, you know,
again, I got to stand behind my theory that I advanced last week, which is the silver lining for a Patriots Super Bowl is Boston fans can't get any more insufferable.
Yeah.
And Eagles fans, if they beat touchdown Tom, will be miserable. It will be a nightmare, and we can't live in that world. So on balance, and all that said, that's why I think that, because I want it to happen, is why I think the Patriots will somehow lose this game, like on some fluky Jay Ajayi breaks like a 90-yard touchdown late in the game when the Eagles were like shouldn't have they take a screen pass and they're just trying to get up any yardage to kick a field goal to tie, and then he breaks three tackles and scores a touchdown.
Yeah, Stephon Gilmore gets like caught up in the turf.
Exactly, that's 100% my prediction for this game is Eagles win on some nonsense. So, you know, I think on that note, we're going to be covering this game a bunch this week. Any Seahawks news that comes up, any Seahawks angles we can find, but also just the game itself. I think we're going to do two more pods this week, so stay tuned. Always give us a 5-star review on Amazon. If you leave your Twitter handle, you're entered to win a PFF Edge membership.
Wait, Amazon?
Did I say Amazon? iTunes, God. Find us on Amazon, baby. Find us. Oh, man, I should never be doing these reads. Oh, boy. I thought I did straight. I was just going off the dome, too.
Right. Oh. No, you were running with it. I respect that. It was a Marcus Williams-type effort. You went for it all, and you missed.
But yeah.
It happens right. Sometimes.
Well, yeah, you get what to do. You guys are smart. You guys are smart there in podcast land.
Yeah, I think that does it for botched live reads. I'm Grant
botched
Goldberg.
On Seahawks.
Botched on Seahawks. Grant Goldberg.
And I'm Spike
off,
Friedman. Yeah. I'm Spike Friedman. Bye.